refuse to believe that the Bank of Justice is bankrupt. We refuse to believe that there are insufficient funds in the great vaults of opportunity of this nation. So we've come to cash this check,
yes.
A check that will give us upon demand the riches of freedom and the security of justice.
Welcome to another episode of Black and White and Thin Blue Lines. My name is Clark Ollers.
And I'm Serge Antonin. And today I'd like to give a heartfelt shout out to a friend of ours and a contributor to the podcast, retired officer Joseph Banks, who is dealing with some health issues at this time and is in need of a kidney transplant. And today he's undergoing a procedure, and our hearts and our prayers are with he and his wife.
Indeed they are. God bless you, Joe. Our topic today involves a traffic stop on January 26, 2024. The traffic stop took place in Harlem at about 6:19 p.m. That was a Friday evening, on West 125th Street near 12th Avenue. The police officer who made the stop had a body-worn camera. That body-worn camera and the traffic stop and more have become the center of some controversy in New York. Serge, you want to take it from there?
Well, we did an episode on Yusuf Salaam, who, if many don't remember, was a member of the Central Park Five, a group of teenagers who were basically railroaded into prison by NYPD back in the 80s.
1989.
Yes, as the result of a gang rape or suspected gang rape that took place in Central Park. And he has now turned his life around and has become a contributing member to society. And as we cited in our episode on him, he became a councilman in New York City.
Well, Serge, just to further elucidate about Yusuf Salaam, he spent 7 years in prison along with four other young men. They were called the Central Park Five. And in 2002, another man confessed to the crime, and the physical evidence supported the confession of the other man. It's highly probable that there never was a gang rape. There's no doubt the woman was raped. It's improbable that it was a gang rape. And in 2002, I believe, New York, maybe it wasn't, maybe in 2002 was when the man came forward. But in any event, New York City has settled with the five young men to the tune of $41 million.
Total, not a piece.
Yes. So that's kind of an admission of liability at that level.
Of course.
Right.
So, and we all acknowledge that.
So we, in our episode on Yusuf Salaam, I think I was very supportive. I remain supportive of him as a human being. He's a member of the New York City Council, an elected member representing Harlem. But tell us about this traffic stop, Serge, and how he's involved.
Well, the reason why it's become, like you said, it's become a kind of hot button issue is that recently they've been encouraging, or they set up a program where council people will do police ride-alongs for input into further bills and things that'll be passed regarding the police in the city. So the first article I read was basically stating that he will not be participating because he was involved in a car stop recently that he thought was unjust. And as we said, it happened on January 26th in Harlem, where he was pulled over by a police officer for dark tinted windows and out-of-state tags on his BMW. And when the officer approached, now I've seen the video. I don't know how many of you have seen the video. And when the officer approached, he was tactically sound. He was very professional and polite. The only thing I can see him being guilty of is immediately cutting Yusuf Salaam a break once he identified himself as a council person.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about the stop. the traffic stops in the dark, even though it's fairly early in the evening. I just want our listeners to know it's
winter evening. Yeah.
Right, winter evening, and it's you can see from the video that it's dark.
Mm-hmm.
New York City police officers have a special anxiety about tinted windows because a New York City police officer was shot and killed through a tinted window, and that is just something they are trained about in the police academy, and they keep they're very, very conscious of.
And from what I understand, one of their regulations is to when they approach a and it's not an SUV where it comes with factory tinted rear windows. This was a BMW sedan, so the windows were tinted aftermarket. And they've got a regulation that states they are to have the driver slash occupants roll down all of the windows so they can see inside.
Right. So this police officer very politely says, please roll down, or he says, roll down the rear window.
Yes.
The rear window goes down. You can immediately see, at least this is my take from the video I watched, Yusuf Salam, who I'm not saying I would have recognized, but he's an African-American male dressed nicely in a suit.
Yes.
In other words, he immediately looks like he's not a street thug.
Absolutely.
And he has his family in the car. It's pretty evident he has family members. Yusuf Salam immediately tells the officer that he's a city council person. And the police officer confirms that he means the city council, I think, of New York.
Yes.
And then he says, are you working? And he says, yes, he is. And the guy says, have a nice night, or something to that effect. Or,
sir.
right. Other words, now, it's interesting, Serge, that you pointed out that he maybe the one thing he did wrong was not give a citation.
Or not even that. He didn't go through the full battery of things he might have gone through had it been you or I. Or let's say I, because I'm a black man.
Let's say you or I in the sense that typically they would take your driver's license,
registration,
do a check, and so
proof
forth.
Of insurance.
Also, this car did have Georgia tags, which is a little bit unusual. I'll get to that in a moment. But I would have done, if I were a New York City police officer in this day and age, almost irrespective of what the written rules require, I would have cut a city council person loose if I pulled him over with his family. Because I would just think to myself, this cannot go, is not going to improve.
Especially in this day and
age. That's what I'm talking, right.
Absolutely. But even 20, 30 years ago, I would have.
20, 30 years ago, it'd be a no-brainer.
Absolutely, because there's no cameras.
Yep. Right. I've pulled over state's attorneys. In those days, they would carry a badge. The state's attorney would open their wallet. They'd have a badge. They'd say they were the state's attorney's office of wherever they said. And I would literally say, have a nice day.
Absolutely.
You know, that. Well, why'd you stop me? That actually leads to a little bit of controversy. I don't hear it in the video. Now, I've only played the video twice. But do you hear Yusuf ask the officer why he was stopped?
As the officer is walking away, and the officer, I don't know if he heard everything he said or just heard that Yusuf said something that may have been inaudible to him. And he just said, be safe, sir. Have a good night.
So, but do you hear Yusuf say, why was I stopped?
As the officers walk away,
you
yes,
do
I
hear
did.
It. Okay.
Yes.
So let's assume he did ask.
Mm-hmm.
So at the end of the day, Yusuf's beef is that the officer didn't tell him why he was stopped. Well, now let's talk about a little from a tactical point of view. Serge, if you're a police officer and you've made the decision not to issue the citation for a clear violation, and it is a clear violation. In other words, this car had windows not permitted in the city of New York.
They didn't look like they'd be legal anywhere, but
okay.
In the city of New York.
So the point is, I think the officer was well within his rights, probably could have written a citation.
Mm-hmm.
The officer's elected not to write a citation. Now the motorist wants to know more information, particularly if I had deniability, meaning if I could say, well, I didn't hear it. I would have just kept walking just like the officer.
Absolutely.
Nothing, because I personally think nothing good's going to come out of sitting on the side of the road in Harlem on a Friday night, engaged engaged in justifying that which is clearly justifiable.
Engaged in a street side court proceeding with a councilman.
And what makes it interesting is Yusuf had to know that those tents were illegal. I mean, to me, it's common sense. You look at them, they're so dark.
I would say so.
Right. By the way, now, this is an aside for our listeners. There might be good reason to have tinted windows in a city in this day and age. It didn't exist even 20 years ago.
I agree.
Right. I think that there are...
Especially for someone who's a council person or such, maybe they don't want people to be able to identify them with their vehicle if they should have some kind of axe to grind. So I get it. I absolutely get it.
I also think kind of for simple purposes of carjackings.
Yes.
In other words, you want the carjacker to be uncertain as to who's in the vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly if you let your significant other, wife or a woman in your family or a younger person drive the car, who perhaps is not as streetwise.
Or elderly.
That's true, too. Very good point.
Mom or dad.
So I don't fault the police officer at all. But what Yusuf does is Yusuf gets a little upset about this. And he says, I'm no longer – he was one of eight council persons who had agreed to participate in the ride-along program because the mayor was poised to veto – a cop reporting bill.
Mm-hmm.
Now, do you know about the cop reporting bill?
I do.
Tell us about that.
It roughly adds more paperwork. Not that I don't think it's not correct, or not that I think it's not correct, but it adds more paperwork. And what I don't understand is that things like this should already be in place. So there's a certain redundancy. What it basically says is, whenever someone stopped, location, race, sex, age has to be reported. So it adds another layer of paperwork. I know when I was a street cop in Baltimore City, we had those things years ago. So I don't know.
So did I.
Yeah. So I don't they were called field interview cards that we'd have
correct.
To turn in at the
correct.
End of the night
correct.
That had all those things whenever
we called
you
them
came
field
in.
Interview forms.
So and they the had same. To be put into
yep.
a box
yep.
that was audited by the district admin. Then we went to something called stop receipts, which had they were in triplicate. So the police officer got one that he kept in his book. The citizen received a receipt, a copy. And there was one you turned in. So I don't know what this whole, except for the fact that times have changed and they want to throw more paper at it for more statistical accuracy. But I don't think the data is ever accurate. So I don't even know what this is aiming to accomplish.
Well, before I were to come to a final conclusion about whether I'm for or against the cop reporting bill in mm-hmm. New York, I first want to say that the mayor of New York is a former police officer.
Yes.
The fact that he, and he's very, very pro-citizen rights. It's not like he's some right-wing guy who's all about the police pushing people around. He's mm-hmm. not. Eric Adams is his name.
Yes.
Eric Adams is opposed to the bill. And there may be reasons he's opposed to the bill, but the one thing I'd like to say that if I were evaluating where I stood on the bill, if I had a choice, if I had an opportunity to vote on it.
They have since blocked his veto, by the way.
Yes, they have overridden his veto.
Overrode
That's right.
It. Yep, overrode it.
But the one thing I would be curious about in New York, because I've never been a New York City police officer, is how many contacts they have. In other words, if you're a foot officer working Times Square and you have I would think you have an awful lot of contacts, and it might get to the point where, and I think about this, if you require more paperwork, it acts as another disincentive to police officers getting involved in the first place. The reason I bring up Times Square is also in the news this week, and it's an unbelievable video, is a police supervisor in the middle of Times Square getting the living hell kicked out of them.
And then another one.
Yes.
Two cops being beaten up.
Yes. By what are purported to be migrants.
Yes.
Now, what's unusual about that to me, and I've been to Times Square a good number of times in my life.
Dozens.
Correct. I mean, you don't go to New York without, or at least I don't, without going through Times Square some point.
I got you.
There's a police station. There's a substation in Times Square.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always noticed the presence of police in Times Square. And I've also noticed many plainclothes police officers in Times Square that I've noticed where sometimes you could tell what they were doing. They were working in detail to try to catch purse snatches and things like that.
Perverts.
Well, you'd see, I mean, I can remember seeing a stakeout where it was clear they were trying to catch purse snatchers because it was an obvious you know, there was an obvious undercover police officer dressed as an older person with a purse, and they were
with brand new white sneakers on.
Correct. And, and these officers were at all sorts of points around this person with, you know, their eyes glued to the bait.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So to me, it was shocking. It's not shocking to me that police officers could get attacked and beaten up. If you told me where is it least likely to happen in New York, I would have said Times Square because of the number of officers that I presume to be there and the nature of the visibility. Remember, they've got security cameras that are being watched downtown. And this beating goes on a while. This wasn't like 10 seconds. Yes. That's crazy.
It's absurd, Clark. But, I mean, think about the time. We always talk about the times we're in. The pendulum has swung so far left. You know me, I'm more middle-of-the-road guy. But at the end of the day, statements have to be made, you know, when you're dealing in work like this. And for them to allow, and I say it's been allowed to devolve into this, what we're witnessing today, it's crazy. But let's get back to...
The people who beat up the police officers were released without having to post bail.
And you got to love it, especially if they're illegals. Like, how does that even happen?
So in any event, the mayor was against this cop reporting bill. The council overrode it. But Yusuf Salam said, I'm no longer going to participate in the ride along. And actually, I thought that was a mistake on his part.
I think it was a big mistake. But I'm not surprised by it. What I mean by that is this. I say it's a mistake because if he's truly concerned with his constituents and how the police are portrayed, how the police respond, then it's his duty to say, this is not about me personally. Whatever happened with me, even though I don't think it was bad, whatever happened with me, I still got to go full speed ahead. Now, as far as him viewing what happened to him, let me go into that. I think he's got a classic case of PTSD. No one in the world would look at him and say he cannot. Think about it. He's the poster child or the poster child of five, you know, for PTSD. As a teenager, he was falsely accused, falsely arrested, served time in prison.
Convicted.
Falsely convicted, served time in prison. He is not, now this is no knock on him as a human being, because I'm sure he's become a very decent human being. But to me, there is no place for a man like that in this broken system, because he'll never see it. Even if, like what we saw, this was the best possible outcome, that car stop. The cop didn't drag him and his family out. He didn't do any yelling, didn't even take his driver's license. But through his lens, it was an affront by the police on this citizen. So I think he's got to do the citizens a favor, especially those who look like him, who deserve to have the system fairly evaluated and fairly revamped. He owes them the duty and the responsibility to just step down. It's my opinion.
Well, I'm not sure I have as strong a opinion as you do about Yusuf, but a little twisted in this case kind of bothers me is this. And I'm going to draw an analogy to Joe Biden whispering, pay your fair share. Okay. You know, of course, that's his tax riff. Mm-hmm. And he has a family of alleged tax cheats.
Yes.
So it's a little bit frustrating to me as a citizen who gets something in the mail every day about my taxes, it seems. You know, it's that time of year now. In any event, what bothers me is this. It appears that the car that had Georgia plates now has New York plates. It was apparently his car. And if he was living in New York and registering the car in Georgia, my suspicion would be he's avoiding two things: higher insurance rates for New York City,
which is not uncommon,
and taxes. Mm-hmm. In other words, when you move from Georgia to Maryland and register your car worth $40,000.
You got to pay the taxes on
it. You pay a chunk, 6%, to our governor for the privilege of coming to Maryland. Your $40,000 car costs you $2,400 in taxes. So if you got his take on the $41 million was about $7 million. If you got $7 million from the city for your settlement, and you're getting a—
because that's tax free.
Correct, and absolutely, and you're getting a decent salary as a city council person. I haven't looked it up, but I'm sure it's a decent salary. You can pay the taxes on your car and pay the New York insurance rates. Just my thought. And so that's my biggest beef with Yusuf at this point.
And it's funny that you bring that up. But I would think, let's say I'm in Yusuf's shoes. When the cop is walking away wishing me a good night, I'd be wiping the sweat from my brow.
You know, it's
because
funny.
He could have easily, whether everything turned out legitimate or not, he could have easily dug into that.
It's funny you say that, because I would have never known that Yusuf Salaam didn't register his Georgia BMW in New York, but for—
this incident.
Him, not this incident.
Him turning it into something.
Yes. Yes. The cop wasn't turning it into anything.
Nope.
He turned it into something. So.
Absolutely. And I didn't really see the cop, but—
no, you can't, because you're looking at his body-worn camera, meaning it's your story of, like, we don't see ourselves out of our eyes.
Yeah, yes. So my point is that I don't know the cop's race or nationality. Right. And I really couldn't tell from his vernacular or whatever. But I don't know, man. I think Yusuf Salaam shot himself in the foot on this one. And while I definitely have sympathy for what he went through, were I Yusuf Salaam, I would take my $7 million and fade off. Or maybe, write some books, Yusuf. You know, do something helpful for the people. But I think that trying to fit into the system that has done you so wrong, it's almost impossible. It's almost impossible. Well, I know I wouldn't. I'd be living in a compound.
That difficulty, though, is one of the things I like and respect in the man, because he's trying.
Well, is he really trying?
I think he is.
Okay.
We can disagree on that.
That's right. We're going to disagree.
We're trying to bring our listeners two topics per episode now.
At least two topics.
At least two topics, just to keep the listener interested.
Yeah.
And our second topic today, again, New York City, involves a problem going on in New York City with the response times.
Police response
time. Police and fire, actually, but we're only going to focus on police.
On police response times.
Go ahead, Serge.
Well, those times since the beginning of fiscal year 2024 have gone up by approximately 2 minutes to crimes in progress, which to me is kind of absurd. Like, when you call the police, it's what people don't understand is you're already behind the eight ball when you call the police, because it goes to a call taker usually, then to a dispatcher, then to the car. I remember when I was a young cop, you talk to people and they'd almost believe that when they call 911, it goes right to the car in the sector and boom, you should have been there 20 minutes ago. I'm like, no, that's not how it goes. So I remember hours in the beginning, we learned that it's at least 7 minutes by the time the patrol officer gets the call and can be on the way. And sometimes you get lucky and happen to be like right in the area when you get the call and not too far away. Because I know sometimes people will be like, I just called and it seems like you're right here. I'm like, well, it just so happened that as soon as I got the call, I was bending the corner and coincidence, happenstance, here I am to save you from the guy with the axe.
You know, Serge, on the topic of people thinking that, you know, you're right there.
Yeah, yeah.
Can I tell a quick war story?
Come on. You know I love the war stories.
I'm driving through a neighborhood in Columbia, and they tone out. The big calls sometimes get toned out.
Meaning
they put a – right. Yeah, yeah. The dispatcher puts a tone into the radio, meaning listen up.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a violent domestic in progress, and they gave a street address, and units start acknowledging the unit was dispatched and the backup, and everybody's acknowledging. I'm sitting in front of – just 100% coincidence. I'm sitting in front of the house. So I call that I'm 1023, meaning I've arrived.
On the scene.
And I get out and I approach the house. And as I approach the house, I don't hear any noise whatsoever, nothing unusual going on in the house. Then a man pulls into the driveway in a car as though he lives at this residence.
Yeah.
In other words, he says something to me like, "Officer, why are you here? What's going on? Is everything okay?" I said, "I'm not sure, sir. Please remain in your car. We've got a serious matter here." And he's like, "Well, I just want to make sure my wife's okay." You know, which I would get.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying, sir. So I'm basically, I said, I don't hear any noise. Headquarters, can you tell me more information? Wife, this is coming through a second party. Wife says husband's violently attacking her.
And you don't know if this guy was just throwing a gun in the woods and returning home. You don't know what's going on.
To be honest, I didn't even think of that.
That's
a good point. I didn't think of that. I didn't think he might have already harmed her.
Yes,
coming
and
back.
He's hiding the knives.
No, he looked, to me, he looked like a guy arriving home from work.
Mm-hmm.
And
was he black or white?
White.
Well, his demeanor, to you, he would look, no, I'm just kidding.
And his demeanor was very, appropriate.
He
amped up about anything. Anyway, eventually, the woman comes to the door, sees the husband, and begins screaming as though he's violently attacking her. Then she gets on the phone with a district court commissioner saying, "My husband beat me up. I need to get a warrant," et cetera, et cetera. So eventually, I come to find out, because I'm assigned the investigation, the caller was a girlfriend of hers, of the wife, who lived about a mile away and had agreed to call in this violent 911 call when husband drove by her house on the way home. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
The idea was that husband would arrive home, husband would be inside, then the police would arrive.
Gotcha.
Just because of my location, I interrupted that plan.
That's funny.
Isn't that wild?
Sounds like something off one
then,
of those ID
then,
shows.
God is my witness, I uncover a relationship between her and the commissioner.
Really?
Oh, 100%.
The police commissioner?
No.
Oh.
District court commissioner.
Gotcha.
Issuing the warrant against the husband and all like this. And to show you how naive
That instills faith in the system right there.
Oh, my God. And to show you how naive this man was, and again, I remember certain details will stick with you your whole life because somebody says something that you think is so totally inappropriate.
Mm-hmm.
I'm driving this man to the station because I'm ordered to arrest him because the commissioner's issued a warrant for his arrest. So I tell the man, "Look, I've got to take you to the station. I'm not going to put you in cuffs." In those days, we had discretion whether we had to handcuff somebody or not. I saw no reason to handcuff this guy. I was 100%. I was already convinced he did not, that this was some sort of setup. So I said, and he was a symphony orchestra conductor. And the reason I say that is he was, you know.
Did you at least search him, Clark Allen?
Oh, of course.
Okay.
But he was a pencil neck. I mean, he looked like, you know, he was not a guy that I felt threatened from. That's not very nice to call him pencil neck, but you get the idea. So anyway.
Wasn't that a classy Freddie Blassie who used to call on wrestling years ago?
So,
pencil neck. All right. Anyway.
So he's in my cruiser, and we're driving back to the station, and I'm explaining to him that I think it's in his interest to hire a lawyer and definitely have his lawyer get in touch with me, that I'm already putting things together that impeach the accusation against him,
mm-hmm.
and that I don't believe the accusation against him. And he looks at me and he says, "This is the price a man pays for being in love with a beautiful woman." And I've never forgotten that, Serge.
Who said that to you?
The man who was under arrest where the woman's going to have him put away for years for assaulting her, and he, like, excuses it because she's beautiful. Sir, let's talk about New York and the response times. New York's down 10,000 police officers. 10,000. Report times are getting longer and longer, meaning, I don't mean report times, I mean time between call
response
and
times.
Arrival. Response
yes.
times, thank you, are getting longer and longer. Again, you almost believe somebody's trying to engineer the destruction of these cities by shipping in tens of thousands of undocumented homeless migrants, cutting – well, first of all, police work is so unpopular, they can't fill the jobs.
Mm-hmm.
So they have an attrition, which is causing them to have – every major department has their down in their numbers.
Yes.
Then they're requiring more work out of these officers, more documenting everything. I don't know where it ends except people like me and you and others voting with our feet. We will not spend our time and money in these major cities the way we once did.
Meanwhile, the politicians, though, continue to lie to the people, falsify data, and get reelected in the process.
Serge, you're a cynic.
No, I'm not a cynic. I just tell the truth, man.
A lying politician.
I'm a realist.
A lying politician. I'll just shake my head on that one and have to think about it until next week. Could there be such a thing?
Do you think?
I'm wondering out loud.
Do you think?
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that concludes our podcast for today. We look forward to speaking with you again in a week. Please feel free to contact us by our website, blackandwhiteandthinbluelines.com. Thank you for listening.
Thank you.
But life is never easy. There's work to be done and obligations to be met, obligations to truth, to justice, and to liberty.
This podcast is the copyrighted property of Black and White and Thin Blue Lines Incorporated, a Maryland corporation. Any rebroadcast of the podcast without the written permission of the owner is prohibited. For more information, we invite you to visit the website blackandwhiteandthinbluelines.com. All of the words in the URL address use common spelling and are typed together with no spaces. We hope you've enjoyed this podcast, and we welcome your remarks through email. The email addresses of the co-creators, Serge Antonin and Clark Ollers, may be found on the website.